Welcome to Nintendo Dads, episode 35. On tonight's episode, we discuss the sad news of Mr. Iwata recently passing, and the impact that it's had not only Nintendo, but also on the gaming industry. Zach, cue the music.
Hello, everyone. This is Satoru Iwata from Nintendo.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a somewhat different episode of Nintendo Dads this week. My name is Zach Erickson, and tonight is July 15, 2015, and joining me tonight is Justin Masson. What's going on tonight, Justin?
Oh, nothing much, buddy. How about yourself?
Not much. I just wanted to point people to, you'll notice we have different music. This music was released on SoundCloud by Hip Tanaka, who has worked on all sorts of games, worked on things with Iwata, and we're going to be remembering Iwata and all of the awesome stuff that he has brought into our lives tonight. So you can check that out on SoundCloud as well, and just thought we'd point them out right away. Joining us as well, Jesse Waldack from VGTribune.com, CEO, or what is it, Chief Editor-in-Chief of VG Tribune.
CEO,
I don't think that works.
He's got a raise.
A promotion.
There you go. you're coming. You're coming after Will's spot there. What's going on, Jesse?
Not pretty. I've been busy with work lately, but a lot of depressing articles over the past few days.
It's been crazy, right? Like
we're getting through it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Joining us as well from VGTribune.com. We're going to have two Zachs on the show tonight. Zach O'Neill from VGTribune.com. What's going on?
Hey, everyone. Not a lot going on. Been pretty much doing nothing lately. As contrast to Jesse being busy with work and everything, been doing nothing except, like,
video games. Where were you? You went to Redmond this morning, is that right, today? We're going to talk about that a little bit later.
Yeah, that's true.
And, of course, you wrote our article on VGTribune.com, Remembering Satoru Iwata, which we're going to talk about as well. And so we're glad to have you on the show.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. It's been a while since I podcasted, so.
Well, hey, man.
This is practically a roundtable reunion.
Yeah, there you go, man. This is like a blast from the past.
The only thing we're missing is Zach Miller, and then we'll have all the three Zachs again.
Oh, man, yeah. That was nonsense, by the way. Like, can we just say never, like, then again, we'll probably have, I don't know, I would love to have Zach Miller on the show sometime, but, yeah. Anyways, should we head straight into the news?
Let's go for it.
All right. So the news this week, Justin, why don't you kind of give us a brief on the basics of what happened this week? Of course, the big news.
Sure. Yeah. If anybody doesn't know by now, right? Is the big news is that over this weekend, Satoru Iwata, president and CEO of Nintendo, passed away. And I kind of want to use the word kind of unexpectedly. And I do think it was unexpected. However, I do think it was also something we probably have seen coming for a little bit. Probably much like when Steve Jobs passed away, like, you knew he was sick, but probably not quite as sick as it was shown.
I've been remembering a lot of when Steve Jobs passed away, since Sunday when the news came out. It feels a lot like that to me. Especially as like an Apple fan as well. Like, when Steve Jobs died, man, it was crazy. And again, I think we all knew that Steve Jobs was sick, and we knew that Iwata was sick as well. But I think that, what's interesting is that it's really interesting, first of all, that the word cancer was never used, but I think it was cancer, that had eventually, you know, was the cause of death for Iwata, but it's for whatever reason they didn't really ever use the word, right? Like, I don't know if it's just like a PR person, like, oh, don't use the word cancer. It was a bile growth duct, right?
Yeah, it was a bile growth duct
a bile duct growth.
Yeah, and it was due to complication from the actual tumor itself, which was removed back in 2014, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of residual, and we had seen Iwata. I don't want to say step away from the public scene, but in some ways did. Right, we saw images of when he came back. He was much thinner. And obviously the internet has shown us.
He wasn't at E3 last year, and he wasn't at E3 this year.
Yeah, he wasn't at E3 last year and this year. You know, words come out now that, you know, one of the reasons he wasn't at E3 this year was under doctor's orders,
mm-hmm.
not to travel, which makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, yeah. I think, you know, much like, and if you compare it to Steve Jobs in those kind of ways, when the CEO of a company is ill, and I think deathly ill, you know, to avoid, and this sounds the crude, crass ways of saying, like, it's all about the bucks, but it's about stockholders, right? And about stock shares and
I don't even think it's necessarily, like, I don't think it's even that as much either. I think it's the fact that, you know, I don't think that you could have pulled Iwata away from Nintendo if you tried.
No, but what I'm trying to say there, Zach, is I don't think they're necessarily as upfront about the situation,
right.
as they would have, because they don't want to create scare.
Oh yeah, no, I see.
In the stock market, and that creates a drop, and unfortunately, right. So yes, you're right. Like, you couldn't have pulled them away from it, but I also don't think they could have been as brutally as honest in his potential situation or the health of the matter.
And to be fair, the man has, you know, the right to his own privacy as well, right?
Yes and no. As a CEO of a company, a publicly traded company, actually, you don't have as many rights as you like to think you do.
That's true.
I do think that a big reason they didn't really say much about it was because of the primary audience for Nintendo being children, and
that's fair, actually. No, that's a really good point.
I don't think that they really want to, like, sadden kids like this by saying the guy in charge of Nintendo has cancer and will probably not be with us very much longer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and especially, and I think, you know, that is not to take away any of the impact that this has had on adult. On adult members, you know, fans of Nintendo, but I think that exact reason may be why we've been seeing such an outpouring on online the last few days is specifically because of that, well, for sure. So,
mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So yeah.
I was initially thinking that what could have been just how the Japanese culture deals with that sort of thing. I could be way off. I have no idea. I'm just guessing randomly. But I like Zach's point is that, you know, they are mindful of their audience.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And okay, cool. So basically what we want to do today, guys, is, you know, we want to remember Iwata. We want to go through what we you know, some of our own personal memories, maybe go through some of the things that we didn't know about Iwata that, you know, it's so interesting that nobody cares about where somebody came from until all of a sudden, you know, same sort of thing happened about Steve Jobs. It was like, man, that guy can sure get up there and sell me an iPhone on stage. But it wasn't until he passed away that I was like, okay, like, now I'm interested in his
with all the articles I've read in the last 3 days, there is a lot I didn't know about the guy, and I was impressed with him in the first place, and I'll get into why later, but I'm actually more so now.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. When I was writing that article for VG Tribune, I was learning a lot of stuff when researching it, like, a lot of stuff I didn't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I mean, like, there's stuff in here, there's some great... He has single-handedly single-handedly responsible for multiple games, either arriving at all or being, you know, being as awesome as they ended up being. So Zach, why don't you lead us in here and just kind of talk about your article a little bit and kind of run through what you did learn and what were some things that were impressive to you?
Okay. Well, I should probably start off by mentioning that one of my favorite games of all time, one that has influenced gaming for me for years, has been Earthbound. And when I was researching Iwata for the article, I learned that he had saved the game while it was in development. It had been in development for 4 years, and the programming of the game was a mess. It was on the verge of cancellation, and Iwata came in and reprogrammed the entire thing from scratch and essentially saved the game, saved the franchise, really, because if that game had been canceled, we would have never seen Mother 3. All we would have had was Mother 1, which was canceled in North America. We would never see any of it again. It wouldn't have the chance to release in North America. And we would have been out a spectacular piece of art, really.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's interesting. I'm looking on, I've been kind of looking at a bunch of different things as well. In addition to your article, one of the things here that I'm seeing is that one thing in particular that game was having trouble with is that the map wouldn't scroll properly. So they would they would be playing through the game and all of a sudden the map wouldn't move, and it just was. And that's one of the great things about that game. And Iwata basically is just like, here, let me take a look at that. And he basically, you know, there are multiple stories in reading over the past few days where he's like, oh, here, let me figure that out. And he would go and just do his coding wizardry and solve a problem. And it was almost like it was effortless for him. It was really interesting.
Yeah, it really is. I think one of the best examples is Pokemon Gold and Silver, which I also mentioned in the article. The fact that the game was too big to even fit on a Game Boy cartridge, and he came in and compressed the files down to leave an extra 2 megabytes over, which for a Game Boy cartridge was pretty damn big.
Mm-hmm.
And that allowed for them to enter the Kanto region as well. From what I understand, Kanto wasn't originally planned, and it was put in there because Iwata saved the game.
Yeah, which is amazing. Think about
it
that.
It is.
I never even really, that never registered with me, but that game was huge. And I knew that it was huge, and it was just this amazing thing that you basically got two games in one.
Mm-hmm.
But for him to basically, again, a very similar sort of situation as with Earthbound, where he's just like, oh, let me figure that out. And he goes into does his coding wizardry and boom, done. Right.
Yeah.
It's incredible. I had no idea that he had that much. I knew that he was responsible for, that he was pretty involved in Balloon Fight and things like that. But man, apparently as well, he worked on Smash Brothers. Sorry, go ahead. Keep going.
Oh, okay. But yeah, you brought up Smash Bros. Him and Iwata, or not Iwata, Sakurai, they were co-developing the game together in their spare time. And it was because of Iwata that Nintendo characters were even involved in Super Smash Bros. For those who don't know, originally the concept for Super Smash Bros. Was a game called King of Fighters, or something like that. And it did not feature Smash character or Nintendo characters. Iwata went to Miyamoto and asked him if they could use Nintendo characters for this fighting game that him and Sakurai were developing. And Miyamoto turned him down. He did it anyway. He told Sakurai.
Of course he did. That totally just, And he probably had a huge grin on his face the entire time he was doing it too. Just like, oh, they'll see that they're wrong. We're doing it anyway. Whatever.
Probably,
it's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you don't think it's a good idea? That's fine. We're going to do it anyway, and we're going to prove you wrong. And if you still think it sucks, then whatever.
Yeah.
Please understand.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he got Sakurai to put in all of the Nintendo characters that they were planning on. And then they showed the concept to Miyamoto, and he was like, well, okay, you did it. Let's do this. Nintendo All-Stars Super Smash Bros. And then it was released in Japan, wasn't expected to be a hit. It was massively, and so it was brought international, and now we have the hit we know today as Super Smash Bros., which is one of my favorite franchises as well.
That's amazing. That's super cool.
Backtracking a little bit, I looked at what the maximum size of a Game Boy Color cart is, and it's 8 megs.
Mm-hmm.
So for the fact that he was able to build a compression algorithm to free up 2 megs. That's, you know,
that's incredible. That's,
yeah,
so quarter of the cart. That's just like, mm-hmm, awesome.
Yeah, and when you think about it, Pokemon Red and Blue were pretty huge games on their own at the time, and it's amazing that they were able to fit on a Game Boy cartridge. And I think he had some hand in that as well. Don't quote me on that.
Mm-hmm.
But then to do even more with Gold and Silver, that is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Related to Pokemon as well, another interesting tidbit that I found online as well, talking about Pokemon Stadium for N64. Mm-hmm. One of the
Y'all are taking all of my talking points.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, dude. You want to take this one?
Sure. Yeah. When Pokemon Stadium for N64 was being designed, they were looking for the old design documents of the Game Boy game so they can mimic the battle functionality to make sure that they behave the way they're supposed to behave. These documents never existed, or at least they were lost. So he had to reverse engineer that logic by digging through the Game Boy code.
Yeah, make it so crazy.
And I've reverse engineered programs before from one language to make it work in another, and it is not a simple task.
Mm-hmm.
It's time consuming. You have to literally go line by line, and I can't admit this is a pseudo assembly code. So it's not like reading Java or C. Mm-hmm. It's reading half of machine language.
Yeah,
and so it's just nuts. And apparently, he did the whole thing in what, a week?
A week, yeah. With no reference documents whatsoever. He just looked at the code and was like, "Oh, this is how it's supposed to work." And within a week, had figured it out.
And that's keeping incredible. In mind that like the battle system is like the entire point of Pokemon Stadium. He essentially like made the main part of the game in like a week.
He built the engine. Everything else was graphics on top.
Yeah. Which is so crazy. Like, then they would have put all the move sets and things like that in there as well. But yeah, that's crazy. That's so cool.
Baseface in the chat says, "Pokemon, this is like my childhood. Stadium is the best Pokemon console game ever, except for maybe Snap."
Yeah, for sure. Like, it's amazing. It's so cool.
The fact that they haven't remade Snap or Wii U is just wrong.
It really is.
That would be awesome to do that with, mm-hmm, with the gamepad.
I also think it would be really cool to do something similar to that with like augmented reality on 3DS or something, but that's getting a little off topic.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Yeah, right on. So, anything else that you found in your? So, moving on, I think that was Melee was the last game that he worked on, right?
No, there was. I think a good one to bring up is Melee.
Right.
Because the game was planned to be a GameCube launch title, and it was, because of Iwata. He was already an executive at Nintendo at the time, and he knew that they were having problems developing Melee over at HAL. So he went back over to HAL and with his team of programmers, and they fixed all of the bugs in a couple weeks that were going to delay the game by months. So, he saved Melee.
That's so crazy, dude.
Yeah.
Amazing. Like,
move over, let me fix it.
Yeah. So, you know what? Honestly, that seemed like it was just like, here, I'll do it. Like, enough of this, like, I'll fix it. Let me fix it. And I think that really carried into his confidence as CEO.
Again, at work, I've had that function. I've had that mentality, too. You know, this is something that I can do in, like, a day. But I need, mm-hmm, to let other people do it so they can learn how to do this, even though it'll take them 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of interesting that kind of move over and I'll fix it perspective, but also his honesty to both lead in that way, but also to take one for the team in that way.
Oh, totally.
And what I kind of mean by that, for example, is that, you know, when the 3DS originally launched, you know, and they talked about, so this is the 3DS, not the DS, we're going to talk about that in a little bit. When the 3DS launched, there wasn't enough really good day one software, and the statement was that the price was too high. And so it wasn't selling as much, And so what he actually did was Iwata took the blame for it on himself.
Oh, yeah.
And he did actually that, accepted that with a personal pay cut of 50%, slashing his own salary and then actually apologizing to fans and investors for doing that.
So he was always kind of one to say,
like, hey, if someone's going to fall on the sword for this, I'll fall on the sword for it.
And
this, it wasn't like, no, it was Joe the Minion over there who did it.
Yeah, and I mean, like, this quote right here.
Please understand.
Like as much as we joke about it, it's kind of amazing, like, that was sort of the way that he would do things, right? Where he was just like, we're sorry, like, we're not going to, you know, please understand, we're doing the best that we can here. You know, and that he would, again, personally, he would take responsibility for those things as well, for sure.
And I think the interesting thing about this, and this is the challenge, and I think especially when you begin to, and I know this is a much bigger conversation, when you begin to separate the man from the brand, and what I mean from that is the honesty that Iwata provided, and this kind of like, please understand, and you know, here's where we are, this openness and this candor that I don't think a lot of CEO executives of major companies you'd potentially see, right? Like, I don't see Microsoft or Sony sitting up there being like, hey guys, here's what we did. It's very rare. But I think Iwata, and maybe it's part of the culture perhaps, but in that trust that you have with Iwata, who he is, what he represents, that bleeds into the brand. Mm-hmm. So how you separate the trust of Nintendo and the trust Iwata are two very different, are very hard to separate, because again, this has been the person who's been at that helm for 13 years.
Mm-hmm. And right? Not only that, yeah,
through some major, you know, you got to think about it. When he came in 2002, the GameCube had already been launched.
Yeah.
So it wasn't his first hardware under his wing, so to say, or under his control, but yet rather, so he kind of already took over something that wasn't doing great. Right, he assisted in trying to make it better. But then think about the things that came out under his reign, and I mean reign like reign of terror, but under his wing as CEO, you know, we have the DS, we have the Wii, and these are two of the most accessible consoles in video game history that have definitively changed generations and other companies of how they approach not only gaming on the home console, but also in the handheld console. And there is no doubt the most popular handheld console currently in existence is the DS.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the iterations we have from being the 3DS, and whether the Wii U is a drop or not. But the point was, for all of those, is down to the fundamentals, is that he wanted people to enjoy games and have fun.
Yeah.
And I think that's what one of the most hallmark statements of Iwata and what the Nintendo brand is.
Mm-hmm.
I think a big part of why he's such a relatable CEO rather than like any other CEO in the world is the fact that he actually came from within the company. He was a programmer and he worked on games for years, whereas a lot of CEOs are just business people and they never really worked in the industry.
Yeah. Like he basically, like he was a, like he was into, he was in the, in this for the games, right? Like that's why he was in it. And just take a look at his Iwata Asks, for example, which what a legacy to leave. Like, look at all of those interviews and all of those wonderful, like in-depth discussions with, you know, with different developers and things like that, to just be able to sit down with the other developers and say, all right, well, let's talk about this candidly and openly. Like, you know, some of the things that came out of some of those Iwata Asks interviews were like, you know, actually really, it was very interesting, but also very personal. I know, like when he was talking about Fire Emblem Awakening with those developers, you know, it was through those discussions that it came out that Fire Emblem Awakening was likely going to be the last one until it was such a huge success, right? And so, like, all sorts of stuff like that. That's just so cool.
And now we have Fates coming.
And I'm sure that everybody has probably seen, you know, the quote, but I'll give it to you now. I've got 11 fantastic, memorable quotes from Iwata that's on IGN's page right now, but I'll pull up the one that probably we're all seeing memes of or hearing is the, on my business card, I'm a corporate president. And in my mind, I'm a game developer, but in my heart, I'm a gamer, which I think really stands to his approach to how he looked at running Nintendo. And then one of my other favorite quotes that he says, above all, video games are meant to be just one thing, fun for everyone. And I think quintessentially, if you look at the last 13 years of Nintendo, since he has been brought on as CEO, that has definitively been their mantra, their mission statement, is about fun for everyone. And we've seen that in everything they do, from, you know, their directs of being Muppets to poking them fun at themselves, to some of the memes that Awada created, you know, staring at the banana weirdly, right?
And even there's even like more recently, just with like the puppets and like all sorts of, you know, all sorts of stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, man, it's so cool. Like, I don't think that we have. I don't know. I'm definitely gonna miss seeing him in the directs and stuff. Like, I don't know what they do with the directs moving forward with that.
And,
you know, like,
and that's actually a really good point. So, I mean, here's something. There's a couple of things to think about potentially. The one is that they may already have a direct recorded.
Mm-hmm.
Right, they've already recorded it. They have edits, and they're just making it. And they probably record a video probably a month before it even goes out. So mm-hmm. They may currently have one still of Awada. So the question is, do they play that?
I think they burn that.
Or they burn that. And then the next statement is, the next direct is almost impossible from a messaging perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because who do you put up there? What do you put up there? How do you communicate that effectively?
I think, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if Nintendo personally put out a tribute video or something like that.
Yeah.
Just to... Like a you know, sort of like final, like Iwata direct sort of thing. That yeah. way, you know what I mean? Like, not that it's actually any sort of news, but it's just like remembering him and, you know, getting all of that out there and then just being like, all right, but we're moving forward. Right. And that hopeful forward sort of messaging as well.
They have to have a little bit of a cathartic release themselves.
Yeah.
And I don't know if anyone's even really noticed, but over the past several years, I've had, you know, how you can have a banner image in addition to your avatar in both Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah.
On Twitter, I've always had the, I think it's, you know, whenever someone's holding a fruit, I've always taken a screenshot of that and put it up in Twitter. But on Facebook, I've always done the directly to you thing, yeah. that forward motion. So, you know, I've had I've had pictures of Awada, of Mifit trainer, of Isabel, you know, so, and right now it's the puppet doing that motion and the puppet's holding the banana.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. It's just like, it's so, I don't know. Anyway, I'm trying to think where we go from here, by the way. So let's
talk about, you know, now Zach, you took a bit of a trip today.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk to us a little bit about your trip up to Redmond?
Sure. So I had seen on the Nintendo subreddit that people were going up to Nintendo headquarters to put flowers in front of their sign as a memorial to Iwata. And I decided, since I live pretty close to Redmond, about 40 minutes to an hour away, I decided to take a drive up to Redmond today with a friend, and we have both been Nintendo fans since a young age. We've loved Nintendo for a long time, and we were both very affected by Iwata's passing. So we went up to Redmond, up to Nintendo headquarters, we stopped at Safeway to pick up a bouquet of flowers. And so we got that, went over to Nintendo of America, and pulled up in front of the sign. There were a ton of flowers there already. People had left plushies of, like, Kirby, and there was a Silver Mario amiibo sitting there, holding like a small banana, and
that's awesome.
Yeah,
and
I
love that.
And there was some strawberry Pocky leaned up against it. then there was a big drawing of Kirby crying with a card of Iwata being held in his hands and a Luigi figure next to it. There was another Kirby plushie with a Luigi hat on it, and a bunch of other stuff. But I laid the bouquet of flowers beside everything else, and a Nintendo employee came out, and all she said was, "Thank you." And I told her, "You're welcome. It's Iwata's work has meant a lot to us for a long time, and it really affected us to see him go. So I figured it was we figured it was only right to do this." Mm-hmm. I had wanted to leave a note, but I didn't have any paper in my car. So we decided to spend a little more time in Redmond. We went to a nearby game store and talked to the guys in there. I picked up a copy of Metal Gear Solid 3 Subsistence and told them about the memorial over at Nintendo, and just talked about that for a little bit. And they gave me a piece of paper to write our own note. And so we did and went back there and put it back with the flowers, and a couple more things had been put there since then. But this is what we wrote on the note. "Mr. Iwata had a massive influence on gaming as a whole, and even though we've never met, we all feel as though we've lost a close friend. Thank you, Iwata, for helping us understand. Zach and Vivian." And so...
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
Yeah. It was nice to be able to do that.
Yeah.
I'm glad I live in a close proximity of that area.
Mm-hmm. Right on, man.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for that. That's super cool. I appreciate that you'd share that with us. That's you know, it's interesting as a community, you know, it's just video games, right? Is almost what people would say. And yet look at the impact that one man has had on so many people. You know, it really goes to show, you know, it's just such a great tribute to him and to everything that he was a part of and everything that he continues to be a part of. Or, you know, everything that is left, you know, in as a legacy from him, I think is just awesome. And honestly, you know, I feel like I feel like if anybody like he was, again, like you were saying before, Justin, like he was all about, you know, let's focus on the fun. Let's focus on, you know, making the lives of other people better. And I definitely think that he, you know, he wouldn't want us like crying for too long. He's like, "You guys, like, come on, Splatoon is out. Did you forget? Like, go play some Splatoon or something." You know what I mean? Like, that's just kind of how I feel like he would go with that. So,
but yeah,
you know what I mean? Like he just loved gaming so much and dedicated his life to it. And the outpouring from everybody, you know, yourself included, is just amazing. So again, thanks for that. That's awesome.
Yeah, of course.
Any other thoughts, guys, before we take our break and maybe pick up the mood a little bit? Any other thoughts, Justin or Jesse?
I wanted to say, you know, it was touched up a little before, but, you know, as we said, most CEOs are business people, and they bounce from company to company, industry, and to them it's the same type of job, you know, make investors happy, make money. But he wasn't just a businessman. He started out as a code monkey, just like me. So he did the cubicle farm. He's, you know, so I have kind of feel like I have a little connection with what he is, because, you know, he's being a programmer as well. So knowing that someone who just started out as a programmer can be a CEO is just kind of encouraging for everyone else.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And then later, and then as we talked about the various games, you know, he was an amazing programmer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, totally. How about you, Justin?
Yeah, I think, you know, I do think you're right, Zach. You know, first and foremost, I'd like to say, Zach, you know, Zach O'Neill, thanks for sharing that with us. I think that's pretty incredible, and it's an amazing tribute. And I think that, you know, what Zach saw in Redmond is not uncommon to what's being seen in New York, the Nintendo store in New York, mm-hmm. what's being seen in the headquarters, what's being seen kind of all around the world is passing this love for this person. So, you know, that's quite amazing. You know, I think definitively, if you're a person who's played video games, anything on the Nintendo for like the last decade or 15 years, Iwata has touched that in some way. So, you know, yeah. I think you're right in regards to kind of like, you know, move on, play some games. It's what he'd want to do and enjoy and have fun. So I encourage you that if you're in the sounds of my voice, to maybe find a child that a son or daughter, and maybe take an opportunity to share some really classic games that Iwata helped bring into fruition, like Melee, like Kirby, like Earthbound, and just kind of soak in and enjoy that time, enjoy some of those retro classics, and share those memories that I think have definitively sculpted a lot of people over the last 15 years. You know, or whether you're an owner of a DS, a 3DS, a Wii, a Wii U, even a GameCube, or have any of those fond memories, Iwata's fingerprints are all over those, and they are now, and they will continue to be in the future as well. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, Iwata's legacy and what he has created, although as a president, you know, and CEO, has now come to fruition, his legacy of what he has instilled upon that company will continue long beyond his life. And I think for that is something that we can be very grateful to for as well.
Mm-hmm.
Dayspace in the chat says he is buying Earthbound to honor him, and in the morning, and he thinks we are right. He'd want us to have fun with the games.
Yeah, totally.
Absolutely. And Dayspace, enjoy that game. It is
so good.
An incredible work of art.
It is so good.
I guess as a closing thing for the Iwata topic, He was an amazing person, and I want to honor him any way I can. I have a review channel on YouTube, and I'm planning on doing a balloon fight review in
nice.
Order to as a tribute to him.
Right on.
Yeah.
Balloon fight, man. I actually, it wasn't not that long ago, just out of the blue, played balloon fight, and it's actually surprisingly fun. It's really a good time.
And they had balloon fight in the world.
Yeah,
world
that's right. Yeah.
I played it for the first time the other day when I picked it up on the eShop after hearing about the news, and I've had a ton of fun with it. It is an incredibly addictive game. Loads of fun. Just fantastic game, really.
Mm-hmm. Right on. Well, with that, I think we're going to take a little bit of a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about some other news, and we are going to read some listener emails as well. So we'll be back in just a minute.
All right.
Bye. Everybody, we are back from our break. We had to get a little bit of pick-me-up music here.
I love that pick-me-up music.
Oh, it's so good, dude.
So good.
I love our theme song. Have I said that before? I think I've said that before.
It always makes me smile.
Yeah. So we got some other news going on this week. And I feel like, Jesse, before the show, you were saying, like, Nintendo still got a business to run. I think we talk about that a little bit. Should we talk about that first, or should we come back to that? What are we thinking here? Like, or we got other news?
Well, I think we got a couple. We got a couple of things that popped out.
I don't remember what I was talking about.
Okay. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about some news. Of course, I'm going to kill this music here. Hang on. So basically, what we have is currently, what is the situation at Nintendo? We've got Miyamoto.
Oh, right,
Miyamoto.
And
who's this other guy?
You know, I had an article opened that told me that, and I just
so the name we're looking for is I'm going to slaughter it wrong. We all know that's going to happen. Genoya Takeda.
Takeda. Yeah.
Takeda.
So he's. I looked this up. I looked this up on Sunday. He is basically head of R&D at Nintendo, hardware R&D. So we've got Miyamoto and we've got Takeda as the two sort of essentially occupying the role that Iwata took before becoming CEO. And so they are kind of joint acting as this. I'm assuming part of this is that basically, you know, Takeda, you are responsible for R&D. You go and do your NX thing. Miyamoto, you do all of the software, you know, the game development, the game, everything else, as well as like all the mobile stuff will probably now fall to Miyamoto as well. You know, Miyamoto will now be involved with DNA instead of Iwata. Although I'm sure he was probably already kind of, you know, involved. But he will. This is just speculation on my part, but I would assume that would all, you know, be under Miyamoto's watch now.
Yeah. And if this probably shoots in the foot what we talked about last week when we thought he was going to go back into development, but I guess this is going to.
I think that things are going to change
a little
bit. Yeah.
On that.
Yeah, for
he's
sure.
He's going to need to stay in the supervisory role.
But I mean, I think again, right? We've talked about this before. We've hearkened on that idea of coaching and mentorship, right? That Iwata and Miyamoto have kind of been forced to do, and I think this forces that hand even more so, unfortunately.
True, but it makes it more difficult now that he's not only has to do that, but he still has the business to help run as an executive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So here's a question, and maybe this is a weird question to ask, but do you feel like Miyamoto, because there was a rumor online that Miyamoto was tapped to be CEO. Do you feel like Miyamoto is CEO, like that's a good match for him? I feel like.
I don't want Miyamoto as CEO.
You don't. Yeah.
I want him as the Robin to Iwata's Batman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's totally that is a perfect way of saying it for sure.
Because I really think that's where he has his strongest point. Right? He has been as much as Iwata has been revolutionary in defining a lot of our childhood as well. Miyamoto has probably more touch on that from a software perspective and from a character creation that we're used to. That I would rather he stay in that position and that they have somebody else as that head.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, Jesse, I've cut you off a couple times.
That's right. I have a feeling he doesn't like the public speaking as much as Iwata did.
Well, I mean, what's really interesting is then looking at Takeda. Then, like, nobody even knows who this guy is, right?
Yeah,
like
right.
But then again, he's mostly R&D, and so it's natural that the person who's in R&D is not going to be in the spotlight. Like, that's the last thing you want from an R&D guy. So, I don't know.
Right,
it's kind of
because I've heard Iwata talk, you know, in English on spontaneously, mm-hmm. and I've heard Miyamoto do the same thing. And at least, you know, in English, Miyamoto, both were really, they really had to work at it. But Iwata had an easier job doing it.
Yeah.
Miyamoto really had to struggle.
And I feel like that leads into another question that we can kind of talk about maybe at the same time, thinking about just the CEO in general. But also, Iwata was also the CEO of Nintendo of America. Reggie is COO. Right, he's the operating officer, if I'm not mistaken. And so, what does that do? What does this do to NOA's relationship to you know Nintendo of Japan? Does this change anything? Does Nintendo, you know, as a result, maybe become a little bit more independent? Does Reggie become CEO of Nintendo of America, or does it fall to you know to somebody in Japan? I don't know.
I'm thinking it could be kind of a split. It could be Reggie gets promoted to CEO of America, and they pick a new CEO for NCL,
mm-hmm.
you know, or they pick a new person to completely replace Iwata in all functions, and to be CEO of both NCL and NOA.
Mm-hmm. Bill Trinan, please. Now,
Bill Trinan.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here's the, you know, as we were kind of thinking about this, I, you know, had a brief thought of, could you see Reggie in that CEO position for Nintendo? Oh, and cool. I'm not talking NOA, I'm talking the entire organization.
Oh, I don't know. I that would be a little bit insane. First of all, from a Japanese, you know, Japanese business perspective, that would be nuts. It would be very cool, but I think he has the chops for it.
And then Bill Trenton gets promoted to CEO or COO of North America.
Yeah, they bring back Cammy Dunaway is what they do. is a blast from the past for you. Yeah,
oh,
I don't know.
Oh boy.
with their like leg brace and everything. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I think I feel like my gut feeling is that Takeda, even though we don't know as much about him, I feel like he's got to be a better choice than Miyamoto. I feel like Miyamoto, like you were saying, he's the Robin, right? He's not the Batman. Mm-hmm. Or I think maybe not the Robin, he's the Alfred to Iwata's Batman. You know what I mean? Like he's back. I don't know. Maybe I'm stretching this metaphor too far. But anyway,
I'm actually liking this because going back to the Smash Brothers talk we had, Iwata had asked Miyamoto for permission, which he ignored anyway. And that sound, and then later became, you know, the boss. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I like Alfred. So make it bigger.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that I remember at one point in the old '60s cartoon where Bruce Wayne needed to be somewhere, or not the cartoon, the live action 60s one where Bruce Wayne had to be somewhere. And so Alfred got in the Batman suit and pretended to be Batman.
I remember that.
Yeah, that was weird. Yeah. Anyway, so I think it's definitely, I think it's definitely going to be, by the way, are you seeing these in the chat room, all these different taglines for Nintendo?
I am.
Okay. We'll definitely be putting those to a committee after the show, everybody. So keep those coming in.
Now I'm going to have to go look. It's in Twitch, is it?
Yeah, crowdsourcing our tagline here.
Awesome.
But yeah, so I think that's interesting. And again, I feel like we were saying before the break, I feel like Nintendo right now acknowledges Iwata's passing, you know, regroups. There's a few different things that have happened as well in the news since his passing. Bill Trinan is no longer going to Evo. Camp Miiverse was canceled, which, Justin, you and I were kind of saying before the show, like, that seems a little bit weird. Like
that does feel a little bit odd.
I don't know. That's weird.
You know, maybe it was there was some other bigger play that was at hand there. I don't know. You know, I always get the impression that Camp Miiverse stuff is being ran by the team in like the Treehouse or in the North America side, but maybe there's some, you know,
and maybe
Japanese connection there that like, you know, they really can't pull out of I'm not 100% sure. But yeah, it felt like that was a bit of an oddity.
In a way, it's still on a short leash, no matter how much we like to think that NCL's giving them some slack, but
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And from what I understand, the whole thing with Bill Trinan not competing in Evo anymore is because Iwata's funeral is on the 17th, which is when Evo is supposed to start.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
I imagine there is a pretty large NOA contingency going over to pay their respects.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure there's just a lot going on with them for sure. So. Cool. Well, yeah, I think that's enough speculation for today, but it's definitely interesting to think, you know, I mean, I've seen some comments online like, oh, maybe we'll finally get some, maybe I'll finally have some games to play on my Wii U because there'll be a different president. It's just like, come on guys, are you serious? Like,
yeah. Troll bait a little bit.
Yeah. Like that's nuts. But, you know, it's definitely, it will definitely be interesting to see how the new CEO changes Nintendo, because inevitably that is going to happen. And will that be, I think having fresh blood, so to speak, you know, fresh leadership moving into the NX, the era of the NX, which definitely has, you know, a lot of Iwata sort of, you know, baked into it as far as the core concepts. You know, we're definitely going to be able to see that next year. And I think that being able to then take that and market that with some new leadership, and maybe make some tweaks based on new leadership is going to be, I think, really beneficial just from, you know, just new perspective and kind of a fresh start as well after the struggles that the Wii U has been having as well. You know what I
mean?
Yeah,
I think you're probably right on that, Zach. I would also encourage people to have some realism in that. In those expectations, right? Again,
it was just Iwata that came up with the Wii U himself, and that it was just him. Well, and just because he's no longer CEO doesn't mean that.
That's exactly it. Like, this is not going to be like a hard left turn that Nintendo's all of a sudden going to make.
Mm-hmm.
They're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. And you've got to remember, again, kind of like, you know, if we go back, I keep harkening back to the Steve Jobs perspective, right? How long did it take? You know, even if we look at the Apple Watch now, that was, you know, there was early sketches and ideas and prototypes of that when Steve Jobs was still alive, right? So his thing, he still had influence or touch on certain things. And I think Iwata and what he had put in motion, whether it's the NX or anything else, will last for quite a while. And again, remember, Nintendo is a conservative company, a largely conservative company.
Yeah.
So you're not going to see any sharp veering left or right hand turns by the organization. They are going to continue to play out, let's say, Iwata's legacy and the work that he has started, and they will show its due and respect and care to that. That's part of the cultural perspective of it as well. I think it's going to take a while before we start kind of seeing like what the new Nintendo under whoever's care it is. And if you think about it, if it's under the care of Miyamoto, they were so much alike, or we use the analogy, the Batman to the Robin, that there may be almost no difference. You see it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I did read an article saying that, you know, Miyamoto plans on sticking with the vision that Iwata had towards the end. And we're not going to see that influence until the next one.
Yeah, for sure. Absolute topic here.
So a couple other things. I'll pull that one out. How's that sound? A couple other things in the news is that we found out that Amazon will now be the exclusive Amiibo provider for Palomino. Or Palomino.
Palomino.
Palomino. Palomino, nice. California, everyone. Speaking of Apple.
Palomino is a kind of horse, dude.
Arizona spelled backwards is still, it's a Palomino.
Well done.
Touché. Okay, so yes, Palutena.
Palutena, thank you.
There you go.
This week, folks. Amazon being exclusive for this. This is kind of an interesting one, interesting move.
Yeah, it's, now.
I hate exclusives. Let's talk about that.
Well, yeah, but the thing is here's the thing, is that if for showing, or they're going to be sending out details of exactly when it's going up 2 days before. So on the 22nd, they're posting exactly what time it's going up. And since they are the only retailer for this, they should have plenty for everybody. As long as you get online at that particular time, at the particular day, to order it online.
I'm sure they're going to limit how many you can buy.
I'm sure they will.
So some asshat isn't going to buy 50 of them.
Yeah.
Okay, now, in relation to the being the only retailer with them, let's keep in mind that Amiibo stock with previous exclusives has not been particularly amazing.
Most recently, like Greninja at Toys R Us, when I went, they had a ton of those. I think they had something like 80 in store, something ridiculous. Maybe it was not that many, but it was a lot.
Like the Toys R Us. Toys R Us near me only had like 20.
Okay. Yeah. So I think it probably depended on the store.
Still, they have to distribute these to all the Toys R Us's.
Yeah.
You know, here there's only one Amazon. Yes, they have multiple warehouses for their inventory, but so they don't have to split the shipments as much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I still hate exclusives. I'm not going to change.
Yeah. No. And here's the nice thing too, though, is that because Palutena is on Amazon and you pre-order it on the 24th, and then if you do want Dark Pit as well, you just go and camp out at Best Buy on the 24th and or on the 31st, or probably the 29th or the 28th if you really want one. Actually, no, they've been saying actually as well that they've got a ton of Dark Pit that is going to be, the estimate is roughly 100 per store. So anybody who lines up, the morning of at a Best Buy is likely going to get one as well. But
And just for FYI, that Best Buy exclusive is actually also in Canada for all of our friends of the Great White North.
Yeah, so I'm going to be camping out, man. I have a Pit amiibo, and so having a Dark Pit is only natural.
Are you really camping out?
I don't know if I'll camp out, but I'll probably get up early that day and go over there.
You and I might need to have a little bit of a conversation.
Okay. Well, it's one per customer, dude. It's one. I can only do
You're
one.
You're killing me.
I know, right? That's a good point. Well, and here's the thing, too, is that I was like, oh, I wonder what time they open. They don't open until 10.
Yep.
So are you kidding me? Like what? So I go there at 7 in the morning?
You even have to take a half day off of work.
Oh, well, that's not going to be – that won't be
– Zach O'Neill, are you an amiibo collector?
Yes, I am.
Do you have the addiction hard?
Oh, yes. I currently am missing 6 that have been released in North America.
Oh, wow.
At least in the Smash line. At least in the Smash line. I'm not collecting the Super Mario series. I'm just collecting Smash and then whatever I see in the future that I like. But despite what I said earlier about exclusives not being in good stock, I do have high hopes for Best Buy and Amazon for this because of the recent restock of Rosalina and Jigglypuff at Target. And the fact that Jigglypuff is still available on Target's site after nearly a week now, and Rosalina lasted for like 12 hours, which is better.
I think this may, and this is maybe just like my complete uneducated estimate on this, but I don't think that the Jigglypuff one is very hard to make. You know what I mean? It's just pour the mold, slap the label, the decals on it, and you're on your way. Whereas Rosalina or some of these more complicated ones, they're probably limited in their production. So I think that might be, for sure. So,
yeah.
Well, it's kind of a little off topic, but it still is related to Amiibo. A lot of people were, wondering why the Yoshi's Woolly World is being so delayed in North America.
Oh, that's totally Amiibo, dude. That's my guess.
Yeah, that's my guess too. Is they have Japan's release and Japan's stock goes there. Then Europe, I don't know if it already happened or really close. Mm-hmm. And then so there that rush of inventory goes, and then it'll be our turn to get stocked up before launch. So they're not trying to find a worldwide shortage at the same time like they are with every other amiibo. Mm-hmm. They're kind of spacing it out.
That makes sense. I actually hadn't thought of that. I've just heard like a bunch of people in Europe being like, "So I hear the Americans aren't getting this until October."
One of the IGN podcast people have already said they had all 3 of them imported from Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we're going to make a good a call to our good friend Alex over on Nintendo Life to see if he'd hook us up.
Yeah, dude, he'd hook us up. I need that. But it's interesting, like. And I think on that same episode of IGN Nintendo Voice Chat, they were talking about like, man, you go to any person in line at a store at like some ungodly hour in the morning and be like, dude, for $12, you'll get this thing in a week. You'll be guaranteed to have it. You don't have to wait in line. You don't have to worry about anything. $12 and it's yours. And I'm like, man, when you put it that way, I never want to stand in line and go amiibo hunting again. So anyway, I think that's that. We'll see how that goes. I'm honestly like I'm not too worried about these two. Like I would like to get them, but I'm not worried about the process to get them. I feel like September is when we're going to start seeing a gong show again, when it's going to get ridiculous. And I'm still having a hard time with these other supposed restocks. Like I was in Toys R Us the other day, and he's like, yeah, a while ago we got in, a shipment with some villagers and Wii Fit trainers and Marth, and I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, why is this such a difficult thing? Where I have three of the four Fire Emblem characters. Like, why do I not have Marth? This really bothers me. Fire Emblem Fates is coming out next year, and if I don't have all four of them, I'm going to be sad.
Your completionism is just tearing you down.
I know it is. As well,
that Nintendo has trained us to do.
Oh my gosh, dude, it's crazy.
Yeah, Marth is the only Fire Emblem amiibo I have, and I had that. I have a friend in Germany who sent it over to me.
Okay.
So that's the only way I have Marth. And I have a Robin coming in the mail soon.
Yeah, right. So I think that's enough amiibo talk for one day. Let's move on to the next thing in our notes here. Just a few more pieces of news. Devil's Third has been having a little bit of controversy going on. For a while, we were hearing rumors that it wasn't going to be coming out in, or that Nintendo of America was passing on it. And now they're saying that they're excited to give us more information. What are you like? How are you guys feeling about Devil's Third? Are either of you, any of you, you know, Zach included, interested in this game? Like what's the deal here? It's for those of you who don't know, it is a Devil's Third is a mature title being published. There was a publishing sort of deal with Nintendo, and it was shown off last year. To mixed reviews. You guys have any thoughts on this?
I'd like to see it released, but I'm not really looking forward to the game. It just looks like a try-hard edgy game that I won't have any interest in. It looks like Shadow the Hedgehog for Wii U.
Okay. Jesse or Justin, what do you guys think? Like,
I actually don't know much about it. What little I've seen doesn't look appealing to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that as well. And I think, you know, maybe that's the challenge of, you know, I talked about in our pre-show getting stuck behind the hype of a game, and I don't feel like I know enough about this game. All I've seen is some screenshots, some gameplay that I think they did at E3 2014, but I think when they first showed this game off. And I remember being kind of, and I think to the point, excuse me, this is a game that's trying to be mature and trying to be something that doesn't feel right on the Nintendo platform. And I don't mean that from a violence perspective, but just doesn't feel like it fits in that brand perspective of what Nintendo is.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't really scratch my itch.
I don't know. I just
it looks
don't even,
very
I,
weird.
I don't understand why this game is even, you know, something that people are talking about, frankly. Like, it feels like it falls under that kind of game, like, it feels like Mad World a few years ago. Mm-hmm. You remember that on the Wii where it was like, everybody was like, yeah, we're getting hardcore games on the Wii, and then it came out and nobody bought it. And I worry that that's what's going to happen here, you know, where...
If you bought a Wii U, you did not buy it for hardcore games.
Yeah, like that's...
Do you know what I mean?
Because you're not getting them there, and so why would you... Why? And the thing is too is like I don't want to you know discourage that kind of game from being made. I just feel like the Nintendo platform is not going to attract, like, people don't buy it for that. And it's not only that, but it's got the kind of gameplay that is fairly, from my, you know, from what I saw of it, kind of generic, and also going for a very realistic graphical style. Which, if this game was on PS3 or PS4 or Xbox One or this type of game, it would look much better too. And so I don't understand what this game is getting out of being on the Wii U. Why is this on the Wii U at all and not on, like, other than the fact that Nintendo is funding it? Why does it exist? I don't get it.
Well, and my second part of that question is, why is Nintendo funding it?
Yeah.
Well, I do think Nintendo is trying to bring in a bigger audience with other mature titles like Bayonetta 2. So I don't think this is too out of place, personally.
Well, the thing with Bayonetta 2, though, is it kind of came with its own audience already, right? Like, anybody who was really excited about Bayonetta 2 was going to come to the Wii U. And it was... I don't know, for some reason it kind of feels a little bit more Nintendo because of its weird sort of quirky Japanese, you know, sort of style to it. And I think that, I don't know, it feels like that's what was really making it, what made that a little bit more of a fit. But this one, man, like, I don't get it.
Yeah. It's weird. Okay. That's fair enough.
Yeah, if you do like a quick Google image of Devil's Third, and you take a look at any of those screenshots, at no point would you think this should be on the Wii U.
Yeah, and I don't want to. Here, I'm searching it here. I don't want to pigeonhole the Wii U either. Like, I want to have a, you know, a broad variety of games on here, but. Yeah, like look, it looks like early PS3 stuff is what it looks like. On these screenshots.
I forget which of the people I follow on Twitter who said it, but sounds like, you know, the early reports on the game is that it's a mess and buggy as hell, and which is, people are wondering why this wasn't shown at E3. Well, this is probably one reason why.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and the fact that he couldn't talk about it until now was he referred to it as a super embargo, in that he couldn't even admit that there was an embargo in place.
I feel like looking at this game too, though, like, you know, because it is such a, like, not only is it a mature title, but it is very mature,
ultra mature,
right? And so I feel like Nintendo. Part of the reason why there's such a specific, you know, a super embargo is because Nintendo's like, listen, dude, we are handling PR on this game. We are handling advertising. Don't you be talking about this without us, because if the wrong thing comes out about this game in general to the public, it could anger some people, right?
Mm-hmm.
It could have ramifications for Nintendo's, you know, squeaky clean image, so to speak, right? Like,
Just generally speaking, even if there wasn't a squeaky clean image, you know, if you have a game that is unlike any other game on a console, that one game probably not going to be a system seller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so totally.
It would make sense to have it on other systems where it would fit in, but this is just a weird, weird situation.
Yeah, it's bizarre. Yeah. Crazy, crazy.
And it works both ways. You know, you could have, you know, a console known for its greedy game, then you get a cartoony party game. You're like, why the hell is it here? Why isn't it on that one?
Yeah.
So I'm not trying to say this game shouldn't be on Nintendo. That was just kind of a general statement thing. Consoles do get pigeonholed, even though we don't want it to be.
Well, and it's not even necessarily like, oh, this console is this certain way. It's almost like you are advertising this game to a certain market because of that, and a certain demographic. Yep. And that demographic just does not exist on Wii U, I don't think.
At least, I agree with that.
The people who would be interested in this game don't have Wii U's yet.
Yep.
Yep.
I think so, they may be trying to pull that demographic to Wii U in order to get sales. I don't know. I'm just trying to come up with some kind of justification for it.
This game This game might have been one of the games that made more sense to delay it and throw it on NX.
Except
we've got a fresh start.
I think it's already jumped from another platform, though, and Nintendo saved this thing from development hell. So.
Probably. But at least you got a fresh console that has no reputation yet, other than its brand, than the manufacturer. Yeah, you got time to clean it up because it needs it by the sounds of it. But I don't know.
Well, yeah. I mean, let's think about, you know, just as a refresher, where was in the digital event, where did they mention Devil's Third? They didn't.
It was not anywhere, right?
Barely mentioned in the press notes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think like we're talking like, was it even in the press notes?
I don't know. It might have been like, I have to look at the press kit.
I don't think it was even in the press kit. Which is crazy. So
that's a pretty good idea of how much faith they're putting this thing.
Yeah. I don't know. Kind of crazy. So, Yeah, I think that's all we've got for news this week, right? Should we head off? I think I hear
I was going to add in a new Kickstarter, but I just got an update on it like 5 minutes ago, saying that they're canceling. So I won't say anymore.
Nice. Oh. Okay. Cool. I also want to just point people to this. In preparing for the show, this is kind of backtracking a little bit, but in preparing for a sort of Iwata retrospective sort of segment, I found this great interview that I want to point people towards. Just look up Game Center CX Iwata interview. It's the kind of thing that if it was in English, I would have captured a ton of clips and it would have been great. But it's a great look. It's in Japanese with subtitles, but it's got some great stuff there for people. Just cool stuff about his life and all sorts of things like that. So I just wanted to point people towards that. So, anything else before we head into the postman?
Postman up.
All right, let's hear it.
It's actually digging the bumpers.
Zach, have you played Mother 3?
Yeah.
Okay, did you recognize that?
Yes, I did.
Excellent. Okay, that's all. That's a moment then. Okay, cool. So of course, for those of you that were to email us, our email address is nintendodads@gmail.com. And Justin, why don't you read our first email this week?
Sure. So the first email comes from Holden Moffat, a regular contributor to our emails. We appreciate it. Hello again, Nintendo Dads. I have a few questions this week. So awesome. We've got a few people on the panel to answer those questions. For starters, following rumors that the NX is weaker than the PS4, my question is, does it matter? Third-party developers may not want to dumb down existing assets to port it, but even if they wouldn't have it to, I still don't think they would bother porting because, to my understanding, many Nintendo fans don't want third-party games. I myself found my Wii U dashboard tarnished by Batman Origins appearing amongst the Nintendo icons. As for broadening the audience with the third-party games, many people dismiss Nintendo's brand as kiddie and would abstain. Please provide your insight.
You misspelled.
You guys want to start with that one first?
Yeah, I feel like so. First things first. Pro tip: use folders if you don't want to see the icon. Next.
I think he's talking in Wara Wara Plaza.
Okay. Yeah. I'm more just being ridiculous with that, but I feel like more than anything, given the life cycle of the PS4 and the Xbox One, I don't think it's necessarily the power of the system that is of concern. I think it's more the compatibility development wise. And Jesse, maybe you could speak more to this, just with your experience and your knowledge about it, but basically being able to right now, it's fairly difficult to port something because of the hardware capabilities, but also because of the infrastructure that the Wii U is based on versus, you know, where basically the Xbox One and the PS4 are basically PCs, right? Whereas, you know, as far as the hardware goes, whereas the Wii U is a little bit different. And so I feel like they want to be roughly on par, but also development wise want to have roughly the same kind of hardware. I don't know if you can give a little bit more to that.
My understanding is if they're using a common engine like Unity or Unreal or something, you know, that handles the architecture differences for you. Then so the main game on top of that shouldn't be pretty easy to port. You just have, you know, to change, you know, the button names, add gamepad or support or whatever this, you know, new system is going to have. I want third parties. I'd like to have one system I buy most of my stuff on. That's the reason why I have two systems, is because I know they don't. And while it seems like Nintendo fans don't want third party games, I think that goes back into the Wii times of the Wii, when the developers and publishers would fork out inferior versions of a Wii game. You know, I don't want this. That's why. If they at least give us a compatible product, that might be different, but they haven't been.
And that's I think where a lot of the third party problems are stemming from, is the fact that the disparity between the, you know, the quote unquote current gen consoles and the Nintendo consoles. They're just not as powerful, and therefore those games are not able to be, you know, easily moved from PS4, PC, Xbox One onto the Wii U. And that's, I think, where a lot of the issues are coming in as far as getting third party support.
Yeah, and I think the other thing to that as well that I think Jesse's kind of alluded to a little bit is also just the general install base, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So let's say our install base is, I don't know, 15,000, right, is what we have installed. You then have to be able to appeal to those 15,000 people to potentially buy your game. If you're a person whose primary purpose is to buy a Nintendo, you're probably buying it for exclusive first party, so you're probably not buying it for a third party, which is kind of what Jesse's getting at. But there may be the occasional one or two people out here, like Holden, or even like myself, who may want to purchase a couple third-party games. Well, that pool is diluting exponentially to a point that you're not making your money back from development. And I think a prime example of this is Watch Dogs by Ubisoft. I believe it was Ubisoft did that one.
Yes.
It was. Right? It came out in June for every other system, and it waited almost 4 or 5 months later because they had to port it over to the Wii U. Now, by this time, the Wii U doesn't have a lot of third-party support anyways, so you're not going there for third-party games. You've probably already picked it up on another station, on another platform.
Hopefully not, right? PC.
Hopefully not PC, but you've picked it up on something else. So by then, you've even segmented out that group because you're behind the ball in your delivery of it because you're four to 5 months later. And you've lost all hype around it, so to say. So I think there's a couple. So once they see that, hey, I'm not making my money back. A, it's taking me too much time, and I'm not making my money. I'm running a loss leader. Then you're not going to have a third-party developer develop for you, mm-hmm. right? And I think that's why you saw in the first couple of years, you saw, you know, Arkham from Batman. You saw the Assassin's Creed 3 game came out, and even Assassin's Creed 4, because there was a large install base, and because the Wii U at that point didn't have a track record enough to understand that it wasn't selling enough for third parties to make the decision not to actually support it.
Well, and that's the first year of Wii U, you know, with Wii U being compared to the PS3 and 360, which is more in line processor-wise.
Yep.
So it wouldn't be as bad. But now if we're comparing Wii U to PS4 and Xbox One, we have the same generational gap now that mm-hmm. we had with the Wii. You know, so when it comes to NX, if NX is quote-unquote weaker than the PS4, we may not have all the texturing and all the shadows and all the faders and shaders or whatever they call them. I'm not into 3D graphics, so I don't know. But the rain effects may look different. You know, if they had Arkham Knight for Wii U, I probably would have picked it up there because I figured they could have done something cool with the gamepad. But nope, they didn't even try, so I got on the PS4.
Yeah.
I avoided the PC one as well.
and I'd also throw back to Holden's question that the very crutch of it at the very beginning is the NX is weaker than PS4. Does that even matter? I'm going to, you know, do a couple things. Pull us back to an hour ago when we talked about what does Iwata believe gaming should be. Gaming should be fun, right? Mm-hmm. And I'll even reference the fact that last week we talked about this in some context as well. Nintendo is not about and has not been about for almost 20 years in a foot race for the most graphical power.
Yeah.
They have said, we are not doing that. We're not going to. We don't believe that's what's right for our brand, our company, and our fans. But instead, we're going to focus on fun, and the games that we create are fun. And the systems unto which they are played, whether unique or fun, like you think of the DS, think of the Wii, think of the Wii U, these are fun devices to play, and that's what they bank on. So whatever the NX is going to be is not going to be graphically a powerhouse, and I think that people have to, you know, like get your head around that. And they're not losing a third party war because it's graphics, right, or the engine behind it. What they're doing is because they're blazing their own trail that really only Nintendo can blaze, and nobody wants to go down that trail with them because they don't think it's gonna be profitable.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Video game guru in the chat says that he would have bought Mass Effect Trilogy on the Wii U if it came out, which it kind of, that was one of the problems with Mass Effect 3 in the Wii U, because that was launched as a $60 game for Wii U. A week later, the trilogy came out for PS3 and 360.
And they wonder, why isn't it selling?
For $40. Yeah. Or some, yeah. It was less for the three games than the one game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they're surprised that it sold 1,000 units.
Yeah.
Zach O'Neill, what are your thoughts?
I kind of have mixed thoughts on it, because personally, I think that I'm always going to be Nintendo, PC, PlayStation. That's always going to be my lineup of systems. And that's partially because of exclusives, but also because Nintendo consoles typically don't have that many third-party titles, especially the Wii U lately. I mean, I look over at my shelf of Wii U games, and I have a total of 2 games that are not published by Nintendo up there. Rayman Legends and Sonic Boom.
And wow, Sonic Boom, man. That's,
yeah.
You should get your money back.
That's a thing.
Or did your friend from Germany give that to you, too?
No, that was another friend who got that for me for my birthday.
Okay, quote-unquote friend.
So at least you didn't have to pay for that.
Yeah, you're absolutely. But, yeah, it's like, I mean, there's so little third-party games for Wii U, and I would love for there to be more, but the problem is developers who put third-party games onto Wii U generally are downgrading them to put them on the system. I want Nintendo to have a system that's up to par with the rest of the gaming market, but at the same time, I kind of want them to do their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think they're at their best when they're not trying to keep up with the rest of the market, and they're just kind of making stuff how they want to. Like, if we look at the Wii, there were a bunch of third-party games, and they were all generally garbage.
Mm-hmm.
But Nintendo's first-party titles were absolutely amazing, save for a select few, such as Wii Music. And, like, we got the best visuals out of first-party games.
And Nintendo showed that 480p still can have amazing visuals, like the Galaxy games.
And I feel like a lot of...
Even Monster Hunter looked good.
I feel like a lot of the discussion around this, too, is based on, like, you know, everybody's talking about... You know, it reminds me of videos, you know, looking at videos this week with Iwata holding up the Nintendo Revolution, and it's this black box, right? And this whole discussion feels like it's around that black box, when really what made the Wii revolutionary was the Wii Remote, right? And so we can talk all day long about what the box is going to be, but it's never been what is the, you know, the hardware that's driving the system that makes Nintendo systems unique and appealing. It's the extra things, whether it's the software or the peripherals and the controllers, you know, the Wii, whether it's, you know, the dual screens of the DS and the 3DS, or the glasses free 3D, or the Wii Remote, or the gamepad. Those are the things that make the Nintendo consoles unique and appealing, and I feel like that is what is also going to make the NX appealing and stand out. It's not going to be the fact that it's the hardware specs, and that's never been Nintendo's MO, right? So,
right.
So in E3 2011, Nintendo took that philosophy the other way when they announced Wii U and only showed the gamepad and didn't show the console with it. So people, including me at the time, were confused. Is this a new system or is this a peripheral?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
I walked out of that conference saying, what did we just see? And Roger goes, I think it's a new console.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And people still, after years, are still just posting the gamepad and saying that's the Wii U.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well,
right, second question.
Oh, yeah, there's more questions here.
There's more questions. I'll run them together because this one I think will be all right. Next question. I just finished Splatoon single player last night. I'm wondering if any of you have reached the final boss, and what do you think? I know for myself, I have not finished a single player campaign. I'm playing a lot of online. I still love the onlines for Splatoon. Zach O'Neill, you been playing Splatoon?
Yes, I have. I've been playing it a lot and introducing it to my friends as well. And I have not played the single player very much.
Am I the only one? I know, Jesse, you burned out on Splatoon pretty fast, hey?
Meh.
Yeah, so I am Jesse the only one. I'm the only one who has beaten the final boss of this then. I have beaten the final boss both in the regular mode as well as, I think it's the orange amiibo, so you have to beat it with the charger, like the sniper gun instead. Man, I love that final boss. It's super cool. I want an assist trophy in Smash Brothers of that final boss. It's super good. It's a really long boss fight. I kid you not, it's probably there was a time trial. No, it was the green amiibo, sorry. Not the orange amiibo that I did it with. But I did the time trial version of it or whatever, and it was 14 minutes.
Oh, wow.
So it's a long final boss, but it is so fun, and just like the character design of that final boss is great. I loved it. I thought it was amazing, and it was significantly harder than just about anything else in the game, I found too. Like, it basically is the pinnacle of, like, all right, you got to figure out, you know, it really tests your movement and your speed and also your your ability to quickly change targets. You know, you've got to shoot things out of the air a lot as they're coming at you, and it's great. I loved that final boss.
Sweet. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to get there.
Yeah.
Final question, he says, are you guys at all considering additional features to your podcast, such as top 10 lists or trivia games amongst yourselves? An example would be IGN's GameScoop 20 Questions. That's a really great point, to be honest, Holden. We've never really considered that. But we are still a very young podcast, so I wouldn't be shocked if we add those things. And, you know, I think a great example is, you know, we can maybe play some musical segments. I know that Jesse and Zach are big music guys from games, and we can pull out probably just something like that. So I would say we'll probably add stuff in the for sure. But if there's any ideas that you have or you want to help contribute to some of those features, let us know.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you guys have any suggestions or ways that we could improve the show, absolutely let us know. NintendoDads@gmail.com, or of course, hit us up on the social medias as well. So, right on. So let's go to our final one. I'll read this one from Nick De Hoyos. He's writing back. Now, is this the guy who had the ridiculous backlog?
He had a two-page backlog.
Okay, cool. So he says, thanks for the advice. Hey guys, Nick again. Thanks for the sage gaming wisdom. As we all know, when it comes to video games, it's dangerous to go alone.
Good quote.
So
good quote.
I've basically decided to go with what you all said and start off with Super Mario Galaxy 2, then go to Wind Waker HD and see where it goes from there. Basically, I'm just trying to switch up IPs and game genres so I don't burn out either. Anyway, I just wanted to give you guys an update. Also, would playing the Metroid Prime series out of order ruin the experience? And what are your thoughts on the two different 8-bit Mario amiibos? Amiibi? I love that. I think that should be the plural. It's actually the plural of amiibo is amiibo. It's like the plural of Pokemon is Pokemon. It's like that. But it says, don't forget to be awesome.
Oh, don't worry. I never forget.
It's actually what my alarm clock says when it goes off in the morning. You're awesome. Don't forget.
So what do you guys think as far as the Metroid Prime series playing them out of order?
Yeah, I think it does.
I feel like it depends. You've got to ask yourself. Here's the thing: is you've got to ask yourself, like, are you going to actually play all three of them? Is the bigger question? Because I feel like if you just play the third one, it's probably okay. Because it's not like there's a ton of story with the first two, and the third one is just as good. It's just, and maybe some people feel like there's a little bit too much talking, a little bit too much story, and not enough, you know, it's a little bit more hand-holdy, I guess, than the first two, but I feel like if you just play the third one, that's probably okay. But if you really want to play them, then maybe do 1 and 3, and if you're super hardcore, then play 1, 2, and 3. I don't know. Yeah. What do you think?
Okay. I am going to be upfront here and say that I haven't played a ton of Metroid Prime. I have the trilogy, but I've played Metroid Prime 3 more than any of them, and I enjoy that one the most. And I absolutely cannot stand Metroid Prime 1. I tried it again recently, and I just found that going all these different ways in, I don't know if this is the whole world or just the first world, but like, I keep trying to go all these different ways on this planet, trying to figure out what to do, and then I spend like a half hour going down one path, and then it tells me, oh, you don't have the item to continue here yet. Go back. And so I'm just stuck there like, what am I supposed to do here? Mm-hmm. Where am I supposed to go? I don't know what I'm doing. And nothing is told to me. There's like cryptic hints at some point or another, but I'm lost, honestly. Mm-hmm. I can't really stand Metroid Prime 1.
It's definitely a little bit rough around the edges, I think, I think that by Metroid Prime 3, they've put in a few things that kind of guide you a little bit more, and are a little bit, you know, it's a little bit more intuitive. And there's also just enough story kind of sprinkled throughout to make it interesting and make it, to compel you to keep going. Instead of, I found in Metroid Prime 1, there was this sort of, they drop you on the planet and that's it. And it's like, why am I even here? Like, I don't understand why I'm here. Like, and so it is a little bit more interesting for Metroid Prime 3. There's a little bit more story there, just enough to make it interesting, I think. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I know for myself, I did not play Metroid Prime 1 or 2 on the GameCube, I believe it was on. I only picked up 3 for the Wii. I loved it. I thought it was a great game. I didn't feel like I needed 1 and 2. I felt like I could probably figure it out. You know, they give you a little bit of a backstory. So, I mean, you know, 3 is a good jumping spot. If you don't have time for all of them, I'd go straight to 3, but that's just me.
As for our thoughts on the 8-bit Mario amiibo, I'm interested to see if either of them are in a bundle, and if so, which one. And, it feels weird to me. I almost wish that instead of doing the classic and the regular, or the classic and the modern one, I wish they would have done like a classic Mario and classic Luigi or something like that.
Yeah.
That, like, I would have liked that better, but I don't know.
Or
I feel like
Mario 1 and Mario 3.
Yeah. I don't know. That would be interesting too, right? Like get one of each, get like a set of 4. So you've got like the 8-bit,
right.
the Mario 3, the Super Mario World, and then the new Super Mario Brothers or whatever. That would have been cool.
I know that my only challenge will be trying to get both of them. Like, I know that I'm going to want both of them probably.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, and that's the sucky part.
I feel like I'll probably just need one. I don't feel like there's a huge benefit to getting both, but I definitely feel like I want to at least get one of them. And that thing looks like a freaking brick. It looks like if just keep that thing in your bag in case you get in a fight in a back alley, because you can use that thing to club somebody over
man,
the head.
Man killed with 8-bit amiibo.
It's got this line. Like this weird grid of little like indents on his forehead or something.
Breaking news. Amiibos cause violence. More at 11.
Yeah.
Nice.
More so than usual, too.
Yeah, totally. So yeah, that's... I don't know. Any other thoughts on those, though? Pretty awesome.
All right. I think we're down to shout-outs.
Yes, we are. So first we got two this week that I was like... That were very similar. First from @CassLush. At Nintendo Dads, wanted you to know that I love your show and I am a dad as well. If you're ever looking for a new voice for the show, I'm your guy. As well, @CallMeChris, @NintendoDads, I want to be on your show. I'm a big fan. Is it at all possible? I think we'll have to have a little bit of discussion behind the scenes.
And that's the same as Chris that's been emailing as well.
Yeah, for sure. We'll definitely have to have some discussions about that behind the scenes, about, you know, potential, you know, I mean, we're always looking for, you know, we're always having different guests and stuff like that on the show. And so I think it could be cool to have more people on. We'll have to look into that. So,
there was another tweet that I didn't put in here, but I wanted to bring it out. So this is a tweet between two individuals. First one is Valerie, and Valerie's tweeting to a person named Ryan Murphy. And Valerie says, "I have a parenting podcast name for you, Ryan, Nintendad. I pretend that I'm clever, but I'm really not." And then Ryan's reply was, "I'll be chatting about it on So I Married a Podcaster," which is a podcast that Ryan Murphy does. And then his statement then later was, "Plus, at Nintendo Dads is already awesome."
Nice.
So me and Valerie had a little bit of a commentary back with Valerie, and she's like, "Oh, maybe I'll check it out." And I might have said that we are kind of awesome, and I'm not being biased, but you should definitely check us out.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, like, I try and be humble, but I think we're pretty great. You know.
Yeah.
So you know, we don't. So the internet tells us, at least. I don't know. Don't. I try not to let it go to my head, but we're pretty amazing. So.
Because we believe everything we read on the internet.
Yes, we do. And when it comes to telling us we're awesome, I definitely...
You wouldn't believe how many times I've been at Tim Hortons with Zach, and he's like, "Don't you know who I am? I'm Zach. I'm on the internet."
Oh, no, what did they do? What did they do? You hit the wrong button.
You pushed a button.
Oh, geez, that was terrible. I'm so sorry. I tried
you
to...
You just started your awesome podcast music.
I tried to... we're sitting here talking about how awesome I am, and I just, like, totally botched my soundboard.
Was that the A for awesome button?
No, I was trying to hit... I was trying to start our... like, get some, like, background music for our outro as we're, like, ending the show here, and I hit the freaking listener mail. Anyways, okay, there we go. That sounds better.
Right. Well, before we get to the closer, I pasted something just now. Before the show, Zach asked about if we had any other WADA memories that you wanted to share. And Alexis Santos says unveiling of the Wiimote at Tokyo Game Show 05. I watched that over and over and over. Daydreamed about it in school even.
Oh, yes. That's awesome. And thanks, Alexis, for providing your memories as well. And it, again, we'll talk about this as well next week. You know, if you guys have any memories of Iwata, we'll have a little bit of listener feedback from that as well. So in memory of Iwata, I think everybody needs to go out and, you know, make an extra effort to play some games this week and, you know, all that goodness. So thanks, everybody.
Go play some
Balloon Fight. Absolutely. As well, for us, if you want to get a hold of us, you can do that on all of the social medias, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. That's at Nintendo Dads on all of those. Email us, nintendodads@gmail.com. You can check us out every Wednesday night on twitch.tv/nintendodads, roughly around 9:30 or so. You can follow us on Twitter and find out the exact times. You can go and check out our YouTube videos over at youtube.com. I don't think it's /nintendodads, but it's, you know, search Nintendo Dads on YouTube. You'll find us. You can call in.
I think it is.
It is? Okay. You can call in and leave us a voicemail at 929-25-NDADS. That's 929-256-3237. Big thanks to OC Remix for our music throughout the show, as well as to Hip Tanaka for that great intro music that we had at the beginning of the show for Balloon Fight. You can go over to megacarter.tumblr.com and check out Carter Johnson, who provided our amazing artwork. And, of course, if you're going to change the world at all this week, please go and leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, and that will get Nintendo Dads into as many ears as possible. And of course, you can subscribe there, download on Twitch as well, or on Stitcher, and of course, VGTribune.com. Any final words before we head out tonight, guys?
Yes, Zach O'Neill, thanks for joining us. Where can people on the internet find all of your great work?
All right. You can read reviews and more articles that I do on VGTribune.com. You can subscribe to my YouTube channel, where I do video reviews and commentary on stuff in the game industry, at youtube.com/C/VGTribuneChimera. And you can look up my Facebook page at Chimera Reviews, and my Twitter page at Chimera Reviewer.
Right on. So, and I'm looking forward to that Balloon Fight review. That should be good.
Yeah, that That'll be up in the next few days. I've recorded all of the game footage that I need. I just have to shoot the camera footage.
Right on. Well, awesome.
YouTube.com/NintendoDads is not our URL. We apparently aren't big enough to have a vanity URL yet. So, yeah, you'll have to use a search.
Yeah, just search it. We're there. You'll find us. All right. Well, I'm running out of outro music. So until next week, everybody, see you next time and go play some games. Bye-bye.
See you, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Nintendo Dads.